Well, if you're a complainant, please just use your initials and let us know what school it is relating to.
My name is Ben Fifield on behalf of Lifetime Academy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello, this is a DM regarding the University of Phoenix.
Thank you.
Who was the first one?
Patricia Williams.
Regarding It's a Dog's World School of Grooming.
First one was, yeah. Oh, Don, you can give your name because you're part of the institution.
I'm Don.
Oh, you're Don.
That's Patricia.
She work at the school?
She does.
Oh, okay. I didn't know she was calling in. She can give her name. It's just students, so. And what's Patricia's last name?
Williams.
William?
And just as a matter of housekeeping, if you would please, if you're not discussing any of the matters with the board, if you will please put your phone on mute. Please do not put it on hold as we will get your background music.
We're getting background
Thank
noise
you.
Right now.
Yeah, so we're getting background noise right now. It's like, so please make sure your phone's on mute.
There we go. We're just waiting on our counsel. As soon as she gets here, we'll start the meeting.
I'm sorry, someone still has not muted their phone. Please do so. We can hear someone talking in the background.
It's like a TV
or TV or something.
There it is.
Thank you.
Okay. And here's why I call the order to order the Arizona State Board of Private Postsecondary Education Complaint Committee meeting for October 13, 2016. Matters on the agenda may be discussed in executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-431-03A3. The committee reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with the exceptions of hearings, and the committee may take legal action on any item on the agenda. We don't have any hearings today, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, good. All right. Any requests to change the order?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. First, our second item on the agenda is discussion and action of the complaint committee meetings minutes for June 21st, 2016.
I have one request for change under Part 3A. If we could remove the name of the student's son, or just put his initials, so it won't be part of the public record. Thank you. Then I make a motion to accept.
I have a motion to accept. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. Okay, moving on to item 3 of the agenda. It's the determination to open a complaint, Lifetime Academy. Mr. Blanchard, if you could please introduce.
Mr. Chair, members of the Complaint Committee, on or about August 15th, 2016, news report in reference to a civil lawsuit pertaining to Lifetime Fitness, not specific to Lifetime Fitness Academy, regarding videotaping of a young girl in the shower stall at the Phoenix Gym located in the Phoenix Scottsdale. due to the possible connection between Lifetime Fitness and Lifetime Fitness Academy, the complaint committee presented this information to you for the determination to open a complaint. I've listed under the institution information that they've been operating since August 22nd, 2013. They hold vocational license number V1556. I've given you copies of the news report and the response from the institution to clarify their position in this. On the phone to answer any of your question is Attorney Matthew Clyfield.
Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. Mr. Clyfield, would you once again state your name for the record?
Yes, sir. Matthew Clyfield on behalf of Lifetime Academy.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to make any opening statements?
Not at this time. I think we provide our submission. We can provide the information required.
Okay, thank you. Members of the committee?
Yes, I have a question. Is the Lifetime Fitness Academy in the same building as the Lifetime Health Club?
My understanding is it is not.
Your understanding, so you don't know?
My understanding is that it is not located in the same building.
Mr. Blanchard, do you know?
The addresses match. Now, if there's two or three buildings in the same location, there's only four facilities here in Arizona. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was an important point for me personally. The issue here is that obviously they are separate businesses based on what you sent. However, a person with a lengthy record of sexual nature was hired by the Lifetime Fitness, and if it is in fact in the same locale as the school, then I would be questioning whether you're providing a safe working environment for the employees. So I guess the comment about it's your understanding it isn't the same isn't very helpful, because if it is the same, I have potentially an issue that we'll ask for legal counsel assistance. If it is completely separate, I still question their judgment and how they managed to hire someone, but unfortunately it's outside our jurisdiction, so I do need to know if it is in the same locale or not.
With all due respect, the gentleman did not have a lengthy criminal record. He had no criminal record when he was hired. That's Mr. Ford.
Well, according to the website I found, it had quite a long list.
Those are all the charges based on
related
the allegations.
They're all based on
file.
This, even though it went on like this long?
Yeah, so every student that may have been in there, they listed them all charges. So all those charges you see is under one CR number in the Superior Court.
Okay, thank you for that clarification, because that was very unsettling to see but more than a screen's worth of information on him.
So this employee was...
Although I'm not certain you have this information in front of you, I can certainly follow up briefly in that regard if you'd like. Mr. Orth came hired with letters of recommendation from various other child care facilities, lifeguarding facilities. A criminal background check was performed on Mr. Orth and came back absolutely clean. Letters of recommendation were provided actually by others to similarly hire him in a similar environment, including child care and lifeguarding. So that will provide you a bit more information regarding Mr. Orth, our knowledge of him at the time that he was hired.
So, Mr. Valencia, did you confirm when I sent you that link? Were you able to confirm that they were all linked to the same one?
Yeah, I saw that. Those are all individual charges.
From that one incident?
From the one criminal case, yeah.
All right.
Can you clarify me what his role was? Lifeguard and swim instructor, did he instruct these students at all?
Must have.
My understanding is that he was an aquatics instructor, but he would also... provide some time or assistance in a child recreation center. In terms of his formal title or assignment, I don't have that knowledge at this point to share with you.
Well, this is a little hard because I don't know that you have the knowledge that we need to do that. Is there? We really should have a representative of the company on the phone here.
Yeah, I look at just the connection between the two entities.
Our understanding was there was a complaint that was brought. It was under consideration. We tried to provide you information demonstrating that no matter what the employee enrolled in, teaching teacher at or participant in Lifetime Academy. So I can affirmatively state that he was not in any way affiliated with Lifetime Academy. And hopefully the documents we provided you in that respect demonstrate that.
Right. You're right that this is a determination to open a complaint. But the more information we could have, we understand that they're separate businesses, but our concern is the locale, where they're physically located in the same building.
Did he instruct
this? Did he instruct? What exactly was he doing? So without that, I don't know that.
Clarification, you mean students. You mean students that are under our purview, or the students of who he's taking care of?
I'm wondering what Lifetime Fitness Academy, what that division does. Do they instruct these students or kids, or are they...
Like part-time, or...
Right.
Yeah.
He might not be employed by them, but is he teaching students or pupils in that Lifetime Fitness Academy, being a swim instructor? That's what I'm wondering.
As I understand it, not at all. Mr. Orth had absolutely no contact with Lifetime Academy. Understand that there are certainly instructing environments that take place at a gym like Lifetime Fitness. So mm-hmm. You have trainers who are instructing members in certain exercises and activities, but that in no way is associated with Lifetime Academy. And Mr. Orth had absolutely no involvement, activity, enrollment in, instruction in, or activity with Lifetime Academy.
Okay.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Yes, ma'am.
I wonder if there's any way if we just put this on hold and if Mr. Plyfield could contact the Lifetime Academy location and try and get
circle
clarification
back.
To have someone join the call today.
I'd happily do that if you like, absolutely.
Or if they could join in, sure.
No, we'll just take care of it today.
Yeah.
He could try.
If he could try.
Okay.
Mr. Plyko, would you be able to do that? You think get a hold of the local administrator to either join us or answer the questions and provide you the answers to give to us, to the complaint committee members?
At this very moment, I can't. I wouldn't know who to reach out to yet, and I'd have to speak with people who are not located in state to identify that individual and determine their availability. If you want to table it, I can certainly make that arrangement so that that individual can be prepared to address your questions at this point.
Complaint and deal with it later. Is that right?
You
can. I hesitate to
open it. Defer action.
I think you could just table until the next complaint committee meeting.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it really comes down to just one question of whether or not the academy was located at the same North Scottsdale facility where this happened.
Right.
And if the academy isn't operating out of the North Scottsdale location, there really isn't a need to open a complaint.
My assumption is they are. It's my understanding that, you know, it's like a Lifetime Fitness, and then they have the classes, but
I'm not sure, because when I go to the Lifetime Academy website, it only lists the Tempe location, which is not the North Scottsdale location. So as long as we can get confirmation of that.
Let's take a point at this point.
I make a motion to postpone this to the next complaint committee meeting.
Got a motion. Do I get a second?
Second.
And now, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it unanimously. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I
appreciate it. So we confirm the addresses?
Yeah. There's a physical location of where they're teaching.
Because then they bring the whole plethora of
other
questions.
Right.
And I don't have that.
I know, but they...
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 4 on the agenda. These are the non-student complaints. First up is complaint number 16-NS510, Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences. And the complainant is the State Board, Mr. Blanchard.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, complaint 16-NS510 was opened on June 21st, 2016, after the complaint committee reviewed a prior complaint from a student. Those allegations were dismissed. In deliberation, in reviewing the documentation that was submitted by CRAS, there were some lagging questions in reference to the refund calculation, the return to Title IV calculation, and the policy and timeline regarding the student retaining the computer. The institution submitted that information in the documentation is the ledger card, the refund calculation, the return to Title IV calculation, and the specific refund policy regarding the retaining of the computer. Here to answer any questions from Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences, Teresa Turner, Director of Student Financial Services.
Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. Please state your name for the record.
Teresa Turner.
Ms. Turner, would you like to make any statement for just be available for questions?
Just available for questions.
Committee members?
The reason that the question got raised was the student had stated that he was almost at the end of his program and he felt he had fully paid for his computer. And unfortunately, the person who came from school didn't have all the facts, so we were unable to determine at the last meeting whether the student had gone sufficiently through the program that he had, in fact, paid for it, or based on a refund calculation, did he still owe the school money? And just unfortunately, there was no one available to answer the question.
Okay.
But since then, the data has been provided, and it became clear that he was finishing the at-institution section, and there was still a very large portion remaining of the program that consisted of the externship. So when he said he was almost done, and that was agreed to by the person who's here, it was almost done with this part, and it was still all this part.
Yes.
So when we reviewed your ledger and your institution calculation, your R2T4 calculation, it's clear the student actually owes you thousands of dollars, and therefore, had the institution blocked the use of the computer, it would have been fine because he hadn't paid for it. But based on the information, the computer actually wasn't even blocked. So do you happen to know, did that computer end up being given back to you, or is the student still in possession of it?
No, the student is still in possession of the computer, and we, as of this point, have not blocked him from use of the computer. They were waiting for the pending court cases to go through. So.
Yes. So that was our only question. So my question was satisfied with the materials that were submitted, and it was clear that you could have blocked the use of the computer, even though you did not, because he owes you a lot of money.
Yeah, even though he stated he can't use it, he claimed that they blocked it. But you, and in your catalog, you say after 3 days we will block it.
Yes.
But you never did that.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, according to the letter from the school owner, they chose not to block it because it's so contentious, and they had the restraining order, et cetera, and so he decided just not to do it. So we're not really sure why the student can't get in it.
Can't get in.
But it's
it,
not
right.
the school's
okay.
issue.
Right.
In fact, the ex-student owes the school the computer, so
yes.
I guess if that exchange does take place, that's part of the stuff that probably should be delivered to your office, and then we can give it to the school.
Should the student, I don't know if the student's on the line, should he choose to return the computer,
he
should go through the state board.
Mm-hmm. The ex-student on the line?
No.
Okay. Yeah, it was mostly, like she said, solely because we didn't have the information in hand when we asked the last representative for the school. So
okay.
I'll make a motion that we dismiss the complaint.
All right.
I second the motion.
Okay, any motion second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ayes have it unanimously. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
See ya.
Okay, moving on in the agenda to the student complaints section. We'll start with number 5A, complaint 16-S007, East Valley Medical College, complainant LD. Mr. Blanchard, if you could introduce, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the complaint committee, complaint 16-S009 was received by the State Board on or about June 21st, 2016 from student LD. After he was discharged from East Valley Medical College. In his complaint, LD stated he had finished the program with an 87%, and his next step at that point would have been clinical portion of the program. During weeks 4 and 5, Jennifer Brumbach, and Director of Education, and Amanda Alburn observed classes that they use for check and verification to see how students are progressing. LD stated that since instructor Angela Schmidt, who's on the phone to answer questions you may have, he should be allowed to start his clinicals and complete the program. EVMC disagrees with that based on the documentation that's been submitted. LD had started enrollment on March 28, 2016. His projected completion date would have been May 20, 2016. His last date of attendance was April 26, 2016. The information has been provided for your review, which includes the complaint, the response, the overview of the interview with Angela Schmidt, who was the instructor, and then the interview with EVMC through Ms. Alburn. Here to answer any of your questions for the institution is Alberta Alburn, Director of Administration. The complainant is here, and Angela Schmidt, the prior instructor, is on the phone to answer any of your questions.
Okay. Just as a point, just to clarify going on, so the tuition for this program is $1,950.
Correct.
And the school refunded $1,050 of that, so they retained $900. Is that correct?
Right. And it was actually, it was through the Rotary Vocational Fund of Arizona.
Right.
And normally they don't refund if it's not student.
I know.
Funded.
Good. Yeah, I know. So. Yeah. Okay, let's hear from the student, please. Hi, LD.
Hello.
Do you have any questions for LD? Or would you like to make a statement? You know?
I'll answer questions.
Okay,
thank you. They covered it pretty good.
So I guess I'll start. You finished the program, but it was on the practical checkoff that you got hung up with the tubes. Is that your understanding? Or can you kind of...
From my understanding from my instructor, Angela, I had a passing classroom portion grade and I had a passing lab portion grade, and it wasn't brought to my attention until we were getting ready to go to externship that I wasn't passing one of the two. And the documentation that Angela Schmidt provided to me and all her grades showed that I had both passing grades. I should have been allowed to go to externship, but it was made by executive decision from higher up that I wasn't, for whatever reason, and that reason I'm not sure of.
Okay. Were you giving any chance to remediate?
As far as, they had me come back in and retest.
Was there any remediation, when I mean extra training, before they retested you?
You said you got a week, right? A week of remediation?
Yeah, I studied for a week. They had me do a certain portion of the test, which I was under the impression from Angela that I had passed, and she said, you're fine, you passed, good job, and you'll be getting your externship placement in the next week or two.
So when they gave you that week, that wasn't any type of classroom stuff? It was just you studying yourself?
Yes.
It was independent studying?
Yes.
There was no further instruction given to you?
No, it was all done at home.
Okay. And Ms. Schmidt was your primary instructor?
Yes.
She's the one doing grades. Okay.
Were you under the impression that you did have a handle and sufficient level of expertise on the tubes? I'm not in this field, so...
Different tubes for different tests.
It sounds to me like, in reading all of this, that you did well in certain parts. I assume the drawing board and some other things, mm-hmm. but... And the outcome of using the correct tubes appeared to be something that you were struggling with.
I had issues with it, but I was under the impression that I passed enough and I knew enough to be able to proceed to the externship.
So you felt you had sufficient knowledge, even though it sounds like each time you did it, you didn't do well on that part, and then you were...
It wasn't I didn't do well. I did well enough to have a passing grade that I was under the impression of.
I'm not talking about the entire grade for the entire procedure. I'm talking specifically about the part that they're saying that you were deficient in, this tubes, use of tubes. Did you feel that you were proficient enough of that to go and work on live patients, that you felt that you would be able to do it right without someone double-checking to see if you were doing
yes.
it correctly?
Yeah, I guess that's what I arrive at somewhat, too, because having been in the medical field for many, many years, and then run medical school for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. There's a safety element, too. There's always a safety clause, because you'll be working on me or anybody else in this audience, And so they do have some leeway within to say, well, this would be unsafe, or not good. I'm not sure
picking the wrong tube is necessarily unsafe. The test won't be right, but, you know, so I'm not sure.
As far as my draws and safety and stuff, I had zero issues with the actual doing the procedure of it. It's just the memorization and retaining which tubes is what I was a little slow on, but I progressively got better. And even when they had me come back in and retake the tubes test, I was told by Angela that I had passed the retake on it and I was good to go.
Okay, I think. But in actuality, you didn't hit the 70%. I think she might have spoken too soon before seeing the actual grading.
She said, I don't know. I didn't. She's.
Yeah, I think.
How about there was some mention of whether you did or didn't disclose perhaps you needed some additional time for studying. Did you provide any sort of a doctor's note or any?
When I was signing up, doing all the paperwork and stuff, I did disclose that I had an IEP in high school. They said that wasn't noted. After the week one or two, I brought it back up to my instructor, Ms. Schmidt, that I did have an IEP, and that's when they modified my tests as far as.
So they did provide some type of modifications for you?
Just taking for taking tests, the weekly tests that we would do, yes.
Yeah. Just so you know with that in the future, too, in any school you go to, it's your job to first announce that you've had that or you have some difficulty.
Yeah.
And then it's definitely on you to say what special accommodations you're requesting.
Yeah, and that was made, that was brought forward when I was signing up for the class before I even started.
I'm just mentioning that as an editorial fact, so okay. Wherever you go in life, you know, because the school won't automatically come to you and say what special accommodations. It's incumbent upon you to say, look, this is what I need, and then they weigh it for reasonableness, and there's a whole thing they do with that.
Okay.
But it sounds like they granted some special accommodations.
Well, yes. I was just going to ask, is that the only accommodation you need, extra time on tests?
Yeah, it was extra time on tests, yes.
Okay.
And was that in writing or verbal?
When I signed up, it was verbal. Then I don't know when I brought it up again the second time, was it week one or two of the program? It was verbal again. I don't know if they documented it or what they
did
on their end.
But they did grant you that.
Yes, they did.
You had tests where you had longer periods.
Yes.
What are you hoping to get resolved here in this situation?
I would like to finish my externship and get my certification. It wasn't until at the very end that I had no idea that they said I was failing prior to the end of the class. I had no indication of that, and my grades that I provided Mr. Blanchard indicates that I had a passing grade in both ends of the classroom and the lab work of it.
Our notes show that on May 6th, you took a test specifically for the area that was considered to be not at speed, and you failed with 65. Were you unaware that you'd gotten a 65 on that test?
I know on the final I didn't do well. That's why they had me come back in at a later date to retake the final, and they only had me retake the tubes part of it, and I was under the impression that I had passed the part that they wanted me to retake for me in order to move forward.
So since May 6th was after the point that you signed a contract stating that you agreed to take the time to study and retake the test, I assume that the May 6th is in fact the true final, but we'll ask the school that.
Okay. I don't have any further questions at this time for you, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay, you can take a seat right now. Ms. Schmidt, are you on the phone?
Yes.
Okay, would you like to make any type of statement on this, or do you just be available for questions?
I'm available for questions.
Okay, well, can you kind of take us through your understanding of that? We heard the complainant's understanding, and he thought he was told by you that he passed all sections.
Correct. And he was, according to the standards that were set forth that I was using, that was correct. Was presented to me that was correct. In the past, if there was a student that was struggling or having issues or problems, Amanda, who does the placements, would say, oh, we can put them out of floor, you know, clinic, we can, you know, floor clinic or lab, or a lot of those, I don't recall which lab she stated as now, but had written right on the requisitions, it goes in this color tube or it goes in that tube and so on and so forth. And I know
accommodations that have been made in the past. When we had visual with him, with Leroy, when he'd draw, you know, he would draw, and he would be almost done, or, you know, I get done saying, you know what, this was the tube, it should have went in. He was self-correcting. And because, you know, I was still in school, and, you know, it was just, I passed. And then a lot of it was subjective, which those documents are. And then we had a sick party. Another person was there, and he had passed Leroy. And then the director called the individual up and asked, you know, why did you pass him? Or I don't know what the conversation was. And he said, oh, I shouldn't have passed him then. And so then those went to fails. And so that's why Leroy's numbers went down.
Please use the just.
Leroy is,
excuse me, Ms. Smith.
Yes.
Ms. Smith, please just use his first and last initial, LD, for this purposes.
My last initial?
No, you keep referring to the student by his full name, and then in the complaint committee, we only forward to the complaining by their, if they're students, by their first and last initial. So LD in this case.
I apologize.
No, no worries. I'm just wanting you to make sure you knew.
Sorry, Ellie.
Who's Ellie?
LD.
So you passed him, then somebody came down and told you you shouldn't have passed him, and they failed him. Is that
correct?
I have a question on the grievance report. You sent, apparently, allegedly, a text saying that these were not your words that you signed for. Is that accurate? Are you saying the school had you sign a blank report and filled something in on your behalf?
I'm saying that the report that was sent us was not what I wrote. That was not all that was stated on there. That's not how the whole questioning and conversation went. There were parts of it that was left out.
Okay, no, that's understandable that when someone is writing a summary, they would not write every word that you stated. I mean, it isn't listed as a transcript. It's intended to be giving the gist of it. So based on the stuff we're seeing here, he passed 22 and failed 19 and draws. And in your criteria, you believe that that is adequate to send him out to work on live people at an externship?
And that was not the numbers that I had added. Those were the numbers that were added after the director changed the grading.
So again, as an instructor, you feel that if he independently, right up to the end of his in-school instruction, he was not able to correctly identify the tubes, and it sounds like you kind of gave him hints and then he could figure it out. You think that was sufficient, that he should go out and work on live patients? Is that what externship is about? Is there supposed to continue to give the person cues on how to do it correctly? I'm just trying to understand this process.
Correct, right. And I understand your question. I wasn't correcting him. He was self-correcting, and then I would pass. You know, then that draw would be a successful draw, you know, if he did the self-correction.
Okay, so can I ask real quick, in a self-correction, if I have three choices, and I say choice one, and you say no, and I say choice two, and you say no, and I say choice three, and you say yes, you self-corrected, is that what you mean? I'm trying to understand what self-correct means.
Nope, that's not. That's, okay, I need you to draw, and I give him two tests. He pulls the tubes down, goes to draw, and then as he's drawing, I don't say anything. I don't, you know, I mean, he's looking at the needle, he's looking at me, and then he states, I should have drawn this tube and that tube, or I should have drawn in this order. That's a self-correct. It's not a self-correct when I say, nope, that's wrong, and he says, oh, yeah, well, I meant to do the other. That's not a self-correct.
Okay, since you have more experience.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But I guess, you know, being a person who's had some pretty bad lobbying experiences of people not getting it right, I admit to being rather confused and concerned that if someone were drawing on me, and they said, oh, sorry, did it wrong, got to start over, I would be so less than pleased. And so I'm just trying to understand whether, honestly, your teaching and evaluation of him
was in fact adequate? Did you do him a disservice by letting him believe he was doing well when he wasn't? Are there other students that perhaps were passed and shouldn't have? And one of these things, it says there were two students that there were concerns about, and so I will be asking the school about the other student. I'm just trying to understand the seriousness of this, and I understand in these programs they do so much at the school and they go out and practice, and I totally understand that in practicing they're going to get some things wrong, but this sounds like, I don't know, like there were issues with how he was graded and being, you know, handheld a little bit too much that led him to believe he was doing well, because I believe he did believe that he was doing well.
And he was doing well, and when I would call the tubes, he had no problem. And, you know, he was working on things for when he was out in the field, and I thought with his knowledge that he had when he went out on externship, if he could be, you know, place some of the sites, that they would choose, you know, for the students, you know, just be a little slower, you know, or just, you know, have those tubes down there. He will pick them up. He has no problem picking it up, things like that. When he was done with his externship, then he was going to be working, you know, at another job to where he would only be doing one tube.
Well, he never made it to externship, though, right?
No.
Right.
No,
I don't have any.
Okay. Let's hear from the school. Who's a representative from the school?
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Amanda. I'm representing
Amanda,
the school
last
today.
Name, please.
Alburn.
All right. Would you like to make any statement for the record?
Sure. So LD registered for the program in February. He received a full tuition scholarship from the Rotary Club, which we helped connect him with. Began class in March. It's a 5-week training program that they do with us for phlebotomy, and then they go out and do a 3-week externship. So for the first 3 weeks, we're not really involved in class. It's more so the student and the instructor. Week 4 and 5, myself and the director of education go up and we start observing. We're looking to make sure that the students are following standards, the lab is being conducted safely, that the instructor is following standards, people are doing things the correct way. Week 4 and 5. So we give them the first 3 weeks just to start to get comfortable, just to really get their feet wet. And then we go up, once they've really gotten a good hold of it, or it's supposed to, then we go up and we start observing just to see how things are going in class. That particular week 4, the director of education, Jennifer Brumbuck, was not able to be present. She was out of town. So myself, the instructor, and another instructor for us, a PRN instructor, Matthew Maroney, who's an LPN, were present that day in lab. I was observing the students, as I always do. I noticed that LD was struggling intensely with his tubes. This was not a mistake here or there. I did not see any self-correction. On both draws that Mr. Maroney watched, LD failed based solely on his inability to pick the correct tube. The instructor even told him, hey, you have great technique. There's nothing wrong with your technique, but you do not know your tubes. And that's a big problem because our standard for grading is that a student needs to be able to start and finish their draw completely. And part of that is pulling the correct tubes. It doesn't matter too much if you can get the blood if it doesn't go in the correct tube. The test is no good. I spoke to LD myself that day and said, hey, what's going on? He admitted that he was really struggling, but that he was going to buckle down that weekend and really study so that he was ready for the final week of class. Final week of class came. I went to Jennifer Brumbuck and expressed to her my concerns with this student, that I was worried that he wasn't going to know his tubes in time to be able to be proficient and go out and do clinicals proficiently. So she observed him multiple days that week. She watched 7 total draws. All 7 he failed because he didn't know his tubes correctly. It wasn't about skill or safety necessarily. It was about that he was pulling the incorrect tube. So at the end of the program, Jennifer and I sat down and we reviewed documentation just to say, what happened here? Where did we go wrong? Is this a pattern that we've seen, or is he just struggling with Jennifer? And what we noticed was that the instructor, Angela, had not followed the grading criteria that she had access to. The instructors, the students, everyone has access to. They go over the grading criteria. It's posted in lab. They know what it is. And that she had passed the student on a number of draws where he should not have passed. Based upon her own documentation, she had written, student does not know tubes. Student did not get tubes. Incorrect tubes, yet she passed him. We, of course, had to change it to a fail. We have to. We cannot give you credit for a draw you did not get successfully. At the end of that, when we re-documented and we re-added up all the draws, that's where we came up with he passed 22 successfully and he had failed 19. The majority of his fails were because of tubes. With that being said, we called the instructor in. We talked to her about it. Why did this happen? How did this happen? She admitted that she had been subjective in her grading of LD, that a few of the draws she had passed him on that she shouldn't have because he was showing progress or he would self-correct. But that's not part of the grading criteria. You don't get to go through the whole draw and then self-correct and pass. That's not how it works. It wouldn't work like that out in the field. Like you said, if you go out and somebody draws a bullet and it doesn't go in the right tube, they have to do it again. So at that point, Jennifer and I discussed, what do we do? It's not necessarily fair to the student because he's been being told this whole time he's passing. So we decided, in all fairness of LD, to give him an additional 8 days to study his tubes. We gave him a full week. Of that week, he came in 3 days to our school. He practiced in lab with our students, which is documented, and he spent time with his instructor being tutored on those tubes. So he did come in three times during that week. He came in, took his test. He failed it with a 65%. His instructor did speak in advance. The test had not been looked over by Jennifer, who's the director of education. She has final say on everything. And Angela, whether she did or didn't tell LD that he had passed, I wasn't there, so I didn't see that. So I can't tell you whether she said that or not. Either way, he didn't pass his tubes test, which he knew he needed to pass in order to prove to us that he was proficient to go out to lab and be safe with the patients out there. We discharged him from the program. We refunded 60% of his tuition from the Rotary Club. We offered to allow him to take the class again with us, of course, at his cost, and he declined.
Wait, excuse me. Of course, at his cost?
Right, not for free.
Okay, so I guess here's my problem.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like your teacher failed him for whatever reason, and I have another student I want to ask about. She maybe gave him a little bit of a pass, and your plan of supervising a said instructor is to tune in at week four. Now, not criticizing that, I understand that time to practice. When it was determined he wasn't doing well, then you go back and reflect on it and see that he was not giving adequate feedback. I'm just having a real hard time understanding why he would have to retake stuff at his cost when your instructor led him to believe he was doing well when he didn't. And, and it seems to me like you're thinking at his expense, of course. Wow, the of course really threw me off, because I was expecting you to say, for free, of course, and then I would, of course, ask him, why wouldn't you just redo it? Clearly you just need more practice.
Sure.
So that really surprises
me. Right.
That was my concern, too, as far as, you know, this is an employee of yours, your responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you mean your ownership of the situation is?
Right.
Is there somebody above you, or are you the highest authority on the campus?
The director of education is the highest authority. I'm the director of administration, plus I'm the clinical coordinator, so I'm the one that is constantly observing students to see where would be the appropriate place for them to go to clinic.
Is the director of education
farm five.
Here today on the phone?
She's not. The CFO, who's part business owner, is here. And I just want to respond really quickly to what you guys stated. Mr. LD, Mr. Duran, states that he didn't know until the end that he was struggling. That's not true.
That, honestly, that doesn't matter as much.
No, it doesn't.
Because he wasn't doing well. He self-corrected, and he was told that's good.
Right.
That's like, you know, almost hitting the ball. He sounds to me like he didn't quite hit the ball. And this is, you know, a problem with telling him, oh, good job, you got it the second, third time, good job. And so he would have said, yeah, I had a little trouble, but she said it was okay how I did it. If, like, as an employer, if I was giving that feedback to my employee, I then couldn't get cranky when they then went and did it wrong because they were expecting me to double-check and see if they did it
right.
So I don't understand your standpoint that it's his fault.
While Mrs. Schmidt was telling him or was passing him when he shouldn't have been passing him, I spoke to him week four. That still gave him 2 full weeks and said, hey, you don't know your tubes. You're not ready to go to clinicals. You need to spend more time learning your tubes because you will not pass this class if you cannot proficiently know your tubes. Not only did I, but the other instructor, Matthew Maroney, said, while you're good in lab, you don't know your tubes. You're not ready to go out to clinicals. And Mrs. Brombach had multiple conversations with him all throughout week five saying, Leroy, you don't know your tubes.
What teacher did you have working with him to help him get up to speed? The same teacher that misled him to think he was doing well?
She was the instructor that was available. However, he could have come in and met with anybody. That was just the instructor he chose with.
If you assigned her, who he's been working with, and you say, hey, you know what, you need to work with her more, and he works with her more, and he's still getting the feedback that he's doing well,
honestly, you know, you as a professional, him who knows his stuff, I'm thinking of that bruise like I'm from here to here, someone who didn't know what they were doing. And, I mean, I can't get past the fact that, yes, apparently he needs more practice, and maybe this isn't even the field for him. I don't know. What I do know is that, in my opinion, your instructor failed him, and you guys failed him. So that's really where I'm stuck. So.
But the extra week of time that we gave him without charging him and saying, hey, you've got a full extra week to really show up.
You gave him back to the same teacher who was misleading him.
He chose to come back, and we didn't require him to.
You have the responsibility here, okay? You are the school. You are the people that are in charge. You're the one. I'm not saying that she didn't do anything incorrectly, but that's incumbent upon you as the school. I mean, we run. Well, you can do this if you want,
sure.
But we run schools. Most of us up here.
Right.
I will tell you, it's not uncommon.
Right.
I've had somebody who got all the way through a program and then came back and said there was issues here with instructional issues. And I did the research on what. Guess what? That person's coming back to my school at no cost to them. Going through again to see if they get, you know, because I have to give them that right, because our job's consumer protection. You know,
right.
That's what we're here for.
I guess we thought we were being extremely fair with LD by saying, hey, take an extra week, because according to his statement, he felt he was proficient.
Because he had an instructor telling him he's been proficient.
But we were telling him, hey, you're not there.
Well, so that's your disconnect, though. That's why I do have an issue with you guys not showing up till week 4 and 5 of a 5-week program. And then all of a sudden being the judge and jury for somebody, it's your job to have your instructors in sync with you. And you got to have mechanisms in which you observe them to make sure they're grading, where you're pulling work. I mean, that is incumbent upon you as the school, not that. I would be offended if I was on a program, no matter how many weeks, and the tail end of it, I got a whole new people that I haven't even worked with coming up and looking at me and telling me about something.
And this extra week, was there a specific remediation plan outline for him, what he needed to do?
We said, keep your book, keep all your study material. They have a perfect outline that tells you exactly the tests and tubes that you need to learn. We didn't add anything new or change anything up, and said, keep it all. Come in if you'd like to. You're welcome to come in and use our facilities. You're welcome to come in and practice in lab. You're welcome to spend time with any of the instructors here. We want to give you that extra time to really be able to show us that you know these tubes. All we ask is that you get a 70% on your test. And he scored a 65. So
I understand why giving him a week was a good thing. It just kind of goes back to the beginning of all along. I don't understand why this one person was given misdirection. It makes me honestly question how many other students have gotten misdirection, which hopefully you would have caught him at the 4th or 5th week, although the statement from, I don't know whose this is from. On Monday, April 25th, Angela and I, Jennifer Brumback, had a conversation after class discussing if she was following lab criteria. And it says there were several cases that Angela had written that students should not have passed. There's another one by Matthew Morinay, where he says that the instructor Angela specifically asked her to observe two of her students, so she knew she had two students that were having trouble. And so I as far as I know, we haven't got complaints from before, so these could be anomalies, but they're fairly big concerns.
And the big concern is that this is an instructor that you deemed competent to be in the classroom to teach the students the proper technique and to grade and administer accordingly. And that's the big concern, I think.
Well, she'd been teaching for us for 9 months and did an excellent job, and we had been in her classroom for 9 months, and this was not something that we'd seen in the past. So we had no intel to know, oh, my goodness, we need to keep an extra close eye on this instructor.
That's good. So it's good to know she'd been doing fine.
Yeah, she'd been with us for 9 months.
We don't know about herself, not with the student, but...
I think that you know, LD he's a very likable person. I mean, I like him personally myself, and I think he was trying hard, and so I think there was some subjective grading on her part. And you're right, it wasn't fair, which is why we said, hey, we want to give you a full extra 8 days to really study and have this time. Please come in and use our school. Ask us questions. What do you need? We want to give you this time. The tests that we pulled, that he was tested on, were the exact same tests that he saw on his final. There was nothing new. We didn't add anything tricky.
Let me tell you that if you would come in here and said, we offered them an extra week, and that didn't work, so then we said, you know what, it was our failing. We had someone who was kind of leading you along and having you think you were exact, but when it wasn't, so we will allow you to go back with a different teacher.
She's no longer working for you, right?
No, she's not. We would have been fine. I would have been fine with that. And honestly, that's normally what we see, is the school saying, you know what, we failed the students, we offered for free. If the student chooses not to do it, okay, you did everything. But you saying we gave him an extra week with the same instructor who had already failed, then too bad, so sad, he didn't make it. So of course he could retake it at a fee.
I'm stuck there.
We felt that the extra week was really fair to give him that time to really study these tests and tubes, and to come in and show us that he was ready, because he had told us he did feel ready. Hey, I do feel like I'm ready. Okay, let's give you 1 week to study, so show us, just come in and show us. Just take the test and show us. And then we had a clinical site ready for him. We were ready to send him out, and he didn't pass it. So we have to maintain our standards at that point.
You do have to maintain standards. We're not in any way asking you to lower your standards. We're just saying that you had a student who felt he was on par, who was subpar, and your mediation for that was go spend a week studying and come in and ask questions of the teacher who already failed you, and oh, you still didn't pass. Your fault. Feel free to pay again. That is honestly
who passed,
stuff. And what about this? Matthew says that there were two students had to be questioned. What was the outcome of the other student?
He did the same thing, but when he came in to take his test, he did not end up taking it.
So it was two students who.
Well, he was. That was kind of a different situation. It was similar but different. Same thing where he was being passed, and we said, "Oh my gosh, you're not passing. We're going to give you the opportunity to come in." When he came in, he did not take his test. So I guess what you guys would ask of us, for this, you feel it would have been fair to let him retake it, even though we gave him the extra time to study and let him take the material?
Based on the circumstances with the instructor.
If it was straight through, he was struggling the whole time. He'd been given proper feedback the whole time, the whole weeks, and then got to the end and he failed, then there'd be no issue.
Yeah,
so
I guess
that's on him. It's
for
you
us.
You had a member of your school, for right or wrong, kind of telling this guy he's doing well.
One thing I do want to bring up, he had a midterm evaluation that his instructor gave him week 3, and she stated on that midterm evaluation, you need to study your tubes, you need to spend time studying your tubes. It wasn't, I think, that Mr. Duran or LD didn't know, or he was completely clueless that he was struggling with his tubes, which is why he ended up bringing up his IEP. That's why he ended up stating, hey, I do have a learning disability. That's why I'm struggling with these tubes. He didn't, when he first registered, he did not tell anybody that he had a learning disability. In fact, it's documented that he's put
NA. Doesn't matter, the law would say whenever they bring it up. That's nice.
Well,
we
asked,
school policies.
Sure, it's in our catalog that we asked him to bring in documentation. Just, hey, bring it in so we can see it. We'd like to see the documentation. He never did.
Then why did you guys grant special accommodations for him? Or is it your contention you didn't?
Because why not? Why not help him out if we can? If he needs, and all he needed was extra time on his test. That's all he asked for. But he did state, I'm having a hard time learning this because I do have an IEP or because I struggled in high school. So we did give him, some extra time on the test, and said, come in early. If you need some extra time, we'll give you that time. So it wasn't that he wasn't made aware.
I mean, it's very, and it sounds like you're pretty versed in it as well. So, but just that's sort of a mission by the school that you do recognize something there and you are giving him special accommodations. What are the special accommodations granted for his clinical testing, the tube testing?
I believe the extra week was the special accommodation to say, hey, we want to give you this extra week. Come in. You don't have to work with Ms. Schmidt. You can work with anybody that you choose to.
Did you say you have your option of who to speak with? Did you expressly say that, or did you presume he would know he could?
You know what? I have to be honest. I wasn't in there when he was discharged, so I can't tell you.
So, again, I think that at whatever point he brought it up, and it sounds like he initially brought it up with the teacher, and that perhaps that is where her judgment went astray, that she didn't go and speak to you about how to do the accommodations, and instead
he did not bring that up with me first.
He did not. Okay, then he made a misstatement. So then honestly,
it
now we don't
brought up with somebody else. Yeah, it was not brought up to me, and then I just decided to do whatever I wanted to do with it. That's not.
So now I won't get into you since you don't work there anymore. But now that makes it kind of even worse for you.
It does.
But the bottom line is when. I guess me as an employer, if I determined that I had an employee who did not do a good job, without being paid for, without charging my clients for it, I would go back and edit that person's work and make good for whatever it is that was missed. That's just as a businesswoman, that's what I would do. My job in schools is I go in and audit. So if I went in and audited and found something was wrong, my expectation is those schools would then address what I found wrong. They would go back and find out, do the retraining, whatever the case is, whatever I found wrong, they would go back and fix it. So it sounds to me like you found the instructor did wrong, and then you told the student, here, go spend a week, figure this out, and come back, and we'll let you take a test. And then when he didn't do well, then, okay, you can pay again to come back. That's where I'm stuck. And so I honestly can't think of anything else you could say that would make me feel any differently about that.
Sure. I mean, you guys are sitting there for a reason. I'm open to feedback. We felt that the week was us being fair and stating, Wasn't the LD just found out week four, oh my goodness, I'm struggling? He knew week three because his instructor put it on his evaluation, and he obviously was struggling to bring it up to her. Hey, I have an IEP. That's why I am struggling.
And then he continued to be told he was so okay.
Yeah, because
you told you're not doing well.
Something else.
Right.
So
we, again, week four and five, he was spoken to many times saying, hey, we're concerned about this. You really need to focus on these. And that's why we gave him that extra week. We thought we were being more than fair
to give him the extra week. So I gave him 2 weeks because he was misled the entire time. So.
So it is still your position, just to be clear, before we make any type of ruling here, that you he could come back, but he'd have to pay.
You have someone else here in the audience. Would you like that person to participate with you?
Do you have anything you'd like to add? No, I guess not.
Okay, do you have the authority to be able to offer for him to retake the program at no cost?
She said no.
No, she said that the person in the audience doesn't want to comment, right?
Right. I don't have that authority, but, whatever you guys say, I can take it back to that person and go from there.
So that's what we're trying to understand, is if there's someone in the room who had the authority to say, yes, we could let him go.
I do have that authority, and if that's what's going to make everybody happier, then, yeah, we're more than happy to do that. Because we want him to be successful. I mean,
okay, and what is your name?
Van Brumbach, I'm one of the owners.
So it's kind of not a matter of making like us, happy per se. It's more a matter of what is fair. And, as you've been listening, it's that this young man was doing it and felt he was getting a lot of attaboys, and in the end it wasn't good enough. And if he had been, barely hitting the 70% all along, was being told all along, you're not passing this, and then he failed and had to drop out, honestly, I would feel bad for him. But this way, he was really misdirected and misled to think he was doing okay. Here's an extra week, too bad, pay again. So if you are willing to offer for him to redo the program, obviously with a different instructor since she isn't there, and if he's willing to take it, I personally would feel that would be a good resolution.
Yeah,
as I would.
It would take me away from my original plan. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So. And I'm pretty sure that plan B would not be a good one for you. So. Okay, so then.
Do you agree to that?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Okay.
That's sorry for looking at the wrong guy.
No, that's okay. Yeah. I'm sitting here.
I'm looking at you over here.
Don't look at us. I agree.
I was looking at you. You're taking a space so stoked, and I'm like, gosh, I can't believe you're not even emotionally involved here.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Mandy, can you contact the Rotary Vocational Fund? Would they reimburse the $1,050 you refunded?
They might. I mean, I can certainly reach out to them.
The same amount they paid.
Yeah, certainly. Right. I would think that that's owed to you. That is yours. Okay. So that I would.
Yeah, if he chooses to retake it, I can reach out to them and see what their position is on it.
Okay, let me hear from him.
We can go from there.
So if you could step down and I'll be from that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for.
I know that was harder than you expected it to be.
I thought it was going to go, but that's okay.
Appreciate
I have surprises every once in a while.
Welcome to our world.
So you heard what was said. Is that the school, again, is doing you a solid here?
Yes.
Are you willing to accept that?
Yes.
Okay. Just be know that it's on you at this point. They're going to be very, they'll treat you fair. We have no doubt about that, but... You have to make the grade.
Yes.
Okay? If you don't, there's really no... The recourse here was because we really feel like you were led for several weeks to believe you were doing it pretty okay, and then it kind of... It just gets confusing. So
yes.
It is very good of them to do that. So if you accept that, then that's all.
I accept it.
And, not to be like a mom, but you commit to study and put that extra time in.
I don't know who you are. You might be his father.
I'm his father, yeah.
He's not to be a dad.
To do that, okay? So we'd like to see you successful, as I'm sure the institution would like to see you successful. They don't have any... It doesn't do good for institutions like ours to not have you be successful, okay?
Okay.
So thank you for that. And with that, I make a motion to dismiss this complaint.
With the
stipulation that and they've agreed to.
Anyway, you have to put in the words so that we can have
I'm getting there. Just hold on a second. Had a long day. So I make a motion to dismiss the complaint, but with the stipulation that the school is going to offer you to retake the program. No additional cost from you. Hopefully they can recover that money because that's theirs.
Okay.
And
I'm good.
Good.
Second?
Motion and second. All those in favor, signify. Any further discussion, first of all?
No.
I hope not. Okay. signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it unanimously. Thank you all for
thank you.
I just have one question.
Yes, sir.
Is this going to be made public knowledge, and how is this going to be referred to you as we were wrong on this?
It's dismissed. So it's
dismissed.
It doesn't go on anything.
That's my point. If it wouldn't have been dismissed and going to option B, yes, it would have been part of your school in public, but it didn't. So thanks so much.
The minutes of all the meetings are public records, so this recording will be posted to the site, and those will be accessible. But if anyone ever calls and asks about the complaint, it's been dismissed, so it will be released.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Amanda.
Hi.
All right, moving on in our agenda to complaint. Item 4, complaint B17-S001. It's a dog world, and the complaint is MD. If you could please introduce the complaint, Mr. Blank.
Mr. Chair, members of the complaint committee, complaint 17-S001 was received on July 5th, 2016 from student MD. She was requesting a refund that was described as a lack of quality instruction. MD filed a complaint with It's a Dog's World of Grooming. After review, the institution denied the refund request based on the refund calculation. You'll see in the complaint a lot of documentation, a lot of handwritten information that it's hard to kind of decipher through. The institution broke down that information as much as they could. Their response, you see in their response, the information that was submitted by the student to the institution was voluminous and very difficult to decipher. The allegations in the complaint was out-of-date textbook, useless grooming kit, lack of quality instruction, and indicating that student teaching class when the instructor was busy. Here to answer any questions from the institution is Don Pennington. She's the campus director. On the phone is Patricia Williams. I'm not sure her title. And I don't know if MD is here or not. She's not.
Is MD on the phone?
Okay. Well, first of all, Mr. Blanchard, God bless you for getting this complaint together. It was all over the place. Stickies and handwritten notes. I think you did a good job. Thank you for at least making it as understandable.
I swore as much as she did in that document.
Sure you did. Would a representative of the school like to come forward?
On weekends. So none of us had to hear it.
It's on weekend, yeah. It's a little quieter.
Did you LOL?
It was, yeah, it was an interesting read.
Please state your name.
Don Pennington.
My name is Pennington.
Hi.
Would you like to make any statements or just be available for questions?
I'm here for questions.
Can I tell you what I just wrote? can I ask you about the book?
Absolutely.
Yes. Here is, I'm sorry, I did bring it, if you'd like to read it.
I looked online, believe it or not.
Wow, I could use this when I'm cutting my dog's hair and giving them a horrible.
I have professionals do it.
It
was a little hard to follow the thread, as I'm sure you know. So by the time I was all done and looked online and read the reviews, it sounded like she thought this was an awesome book, but felt that you did not follow the quality tips in this book. Is that what her complaint was?
Her complaint to us was that she didn't like this book. She had a different book that she liked better. I made copies of a couple pages that she had given us for that book, thinking that the school should change
the
book
that
we used.
Is that the one she said she had the author?
Yes.
Okay, I got it mixed up. Okay, good job. Okay. Do you have other questions?
Well, I was just going to say what's your response. I mean, I read it to the outdated book, useless grooming kits. I don't know how you run a school with useless grooming kits. So I don't really have any questions. And the complainant's not here to.
It sounded like most of the questions that when I went through and read hers and I made notes, when I read yours, you answered them. So thank
I
you.
I sure
that.
Tried. You're
yeah.
welcome.
And they were
well, not easy to
hard
respond.
Explaining about the students and all of that stuff and the comments. I think actually when all was said and done, so she isn't here to say if I misunderstood any of her things, because I was satisfied with your answers, so she's not here to say otherwise. It only comes down to, and it may not make any difference dollar-wise, but you stated, having signed something, saying that because you gave her a financing policy, the refund policy became null and void, and that is not accurate. Refund policy always applies. However, math-wise, it may come out exactly the same, but the refund policy would still apply. And when you do it, obviously, if the student has paid 100% and you do the math, you get back the difference. Since she hadn't given it to you all,
right,
you pretty much would be saying, how much am I entitled to keep? Oh, that's what I got. I'm good. But don't have somebody sign something saying the refund policy doesn't apply to them.
Okay.
And then other than that, it was just the...
Wasn't the installment plan.
You hadn't published it, and you gave her one, and I assume it was because you were trying to be accommodating, but I'm pretty sure the rules are if you're going to give it, you have to publish it, and anybody can have it.
You do, right? It's actually a violation.
So I think that those are the only two things that, with all said and done. Okay.
I don't have a lot to say, but to answer I guess there wasn't even a question about it, but the fact that I gave her the opportunity to make payments, we have done that a couple of times for a few students, and it's not that we're not willing to do it for everybody, and we have, as we're working on the new stuff for this year, we've added it now to that. Rad and Joan, who are the owners of the school, he actually thought that he had it in there and that everything was fine, but we must have missed it upon review when we first looked at it.
But it's not that you can't do it. You should probably do it.
Yes, we're adding it in there.
That's a lot of scraps to come out of pocket with $6,000. So you just add, it's got to be uniform. It's got to be available to all students.
Right.
A lot of people charge a little more for people to do payment plans to kind of cover that and do that mid. Versus kind of giving an all cash up front discount. There's different ways you could do that. Just know that you have to do that if you're going to offer those, okay?
Sure.
And if you do it as a way that you're lining up with the refund policy, that you are sort of getting what you have earned, that actually works out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do the refund policy, it turns out you've received what you're supposed to have. That's pretty fair on both sides.
Right, okay.
But you can't just not do the refund policy. You still do the math and then say it's okay.
Okay.
That's fine. Since she has fixed it, and this was certainly a learning experience for her, can we dismiss the complaint without...
I think I'd be comfortable with dismiss the complaint with the stipulation that you agree to put that in the catalog.
Yes, it's our...
Can I dismiss with prejudice with a stipulation?
No,
okay.
Because if they don't follow the stipulation, we have to be able to bring the complaint back.
The only reason I would do, I tend with these people that don't show up after filing a complaint to want to do it so they don't resurface every 6 months or a year.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you put us in place of stipulation, we could reopen the matter if they don't follow the stipulations.
Okay. Is there a motion?
And so we made the motion to dismiss the complaint, but I advise you to follow through with applying the refund policy to all students and including your payment plan in your next submission.
Absolutely, it's already in there.
Okay. I'll take a vote then. If there's no further discussion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right, and ayes have it unanimously. Thank you for appearing today.
Thank you.
Don, did you say you have it in your policy now, the refund policy?
The new book that we're submitting.
On the catalog? Is it in your enrollment agreement as well?
In the normal.
Your enrollment agreement?
It will be, yeah.
Okay.
That's what we're putting
in
now.
Are you on renewal now? You renew a couple
we're
work, months?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to get those to Mr. Blank.
Do you want this back? There's no, it looks like she's never
If you're not going to use it, then...
No, I'll read it next month.
Yeah.
I don't have a dog anymore.
We'll reuse it.
I've got a wife, a dog.
Oh.
Wow.
It's
a public record deed.
I just... All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You did a good job answering it. I'm sure that was a challenge, so thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
All right. Thank you. All right. Moving on in the agenda, we're on item C of agenda item 4C, 17S002, Brookline College with complaint RK. Mr. Blanchard, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the Complaint Committee, complaint 17-002 was received on August 25th, 2016, reference to a complaint submitted by RK. In her original complaint, she had indicated that there was she was unable to complete the institutional grievance procedure. She thought there was a lack of response from staff. She thought lack of textbooks. The complaint was submitted to the institution for a response. They did respond to the complaint. You will see in the information that they have refunded all costs and tuition and fees to RK, Title IV, and also in reference to a Pell Grant. I spoke with RK after that. She was happy with the outcome. She wanted to dismiss the complaint, indicated that it had to be done at the complaint committee level. Here to answer any of your questions for the institution is Matthew Egan, Chief Compliance Officer.
Oh, he's compliant. No, no, I didn't smile. I was going to say, I'm sorry we thought you were thinking he's MC.
That's
quite
all right. I thought you were seeing it so smug, saying, we refunded it. So,
please state
not at all. Matthew Egan.
Okay, any statements or just available for questions?
No, but I'm thank you for the opportunity to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Well, so, I'd like to say that I appreciate that. I did read through it all just in case you were pulling a fast one on us.
Sure.
And honestly, I think that your resolution of it was very generous and honestly would have been probably more than we would have asked you to do. So thank you very much for taking such a thorough approach.
Certainly, I appreciate that. I was uncomfortable with the idea that there may have been some miscommunication specifically regarding our formal grievance policy, and I was uncomfortable with the fact that she may not have been given better direction on how to go about the grievance. And I certainly am always uncomfortable when someone is through most of the program and still doesn't feel comfortable going into the field. So that was the resolution that we thought was appropriate.
That was great.
Yeah, I think you did a good job.
Thank you.
And it sounds like, just to confirm one more time, RK is good with this from your
yes.
dealings with her?
Yep.
I present a motion, if I may, to dismiss the complaint, and thank you.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
No.
Okay, hearing none, call for the vote. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's the kind of thing I like.
Yeah. We should put in first the seven lessons.
Yeah, we should. I should have liked to have heard that one. All right, moving on to Agenda Item 4B, Complaint 17-S003, the University of Phoenix complainant is DM. Mr. Blanchard, please introduce.
Mr. Chair, members of the Complaint Committee, Complaint 17-S003 was submitted after it was reviewed by Arizona SARA. DM submitted a complaint in reference to allegations that the university was not allowing her to complete the two remaining credit hours of her dual MSN MHN V02 program. She submitted the documentation to support her position. The institution did submit a response. It included in his response her date of enrollment, which was from March 22, 2011 through July 20, 2015. The length of time to complete the program, all the communication between the university and to DM. The requested information, which is attached for your review, was the response, a copy of a letter from the university to DM dated June 6, 2016, a copy of the enrollment agreement, and then the program completion deadlines, which was removed from the catalog. Here to answer any of your questions for the university is Austin Rhodes, Associate General Counsel, and Julie Kelly, Student Grievance and Appeals. On the phone is DM, and she, I believe, is in Texas, is why she couldn't be here in person.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. DM, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you.
Please state your initials for the record, please.
This is DM.
Okay. Would you like to make any statement or be available for questions?
I would like to do both, if I may.
You may. Go ahead.
Very briefly, I am only requesting that I be allowed to finish the 2 hours of my dual master's program. I have completed 52 of the 54 required credit hours, and My GPA is 3.46, and the 2 hours remaining are the second part of my practicum. And I can't move forward and complete this because the university is not allowing me to do so because of their five-year requirement to complete a master's degree. I am going to school on an NEI scholarship, which allows me 6 years to complete the educational program, and that will be up in March of 2017. I did provide some documentation stating my personal challenges and that really limited my time on school for a period of time. So my request is very simple, and I'll be available for any questions that you have.
Okay. At this time, does anybody have questions for DM?
I have a question. DM, are you under the assumption then that the NNEI program completion time takes like a precedent or overrides the university's degree completion requirements?
Yeah.
Originally, that was my understanding, because when I got the scholarship through the VA, it is a scholarship for VA nurses that want to further their education. Evidently it was my understanding that I had the 6 years in which to do so. I did sign enrollment documents with the University of Phoenix. I'm not denying that. And learned late in the program, or was reminded of the five-year requirement to complete it. But again, as I said, I had some personal issues and was able to complete everything that I did except the two remaining hours.
Okay.
Go ahead. My practicum site is a church, and they were in the process of moving, physically built a new building. So I had made my presentation to the council. So basically, the physical move of the church, and as you can imagine, that's quite a deal, sort of took priority over my plans. So right now I'm on hold with the second part until this gets resolved.
All right. I'm under the understanding that the NNEI program completion time is their requirement that they're putting on the student to complete any program within 6 years because they're paying for it. And that does not have any connection with a school-specific requirements for a program version completion time of 5 years.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to make that clear, because you said before you had 6 years from NNEI, and they're not the same thing.
Oh no, I completely understand.
Okay.
That. I have two questions of you. The first one was about the practicum site, so thank you for explaining that, but did you bring that to the attention of anyone at the university to explain that that was putting a hitch in your time frame?
Yes, I did. It's in an email. But at the moment, I don't have it in front of me.
Do you recall what their advice was when you told them that was going to give you, or did you tell them that would give you difficulty in finishing on time? And what did they tell you to do?
Basically, nobody gave me any hope for increasing the time frame, the five-year requirement.
So at the time, did you tell them about the practicum site issues after the five-year deadline had occurred or prior?
It was prior to March of this year.
So when they told you, sorry to hear about your site, you still have to finish on time, they told you that?
Pretty much.
Okay. And then if I'm understanding this correctly,
when you finished NUR 590A in July of 15, you completed 10 out of the required 60 hours since you completed that course?
pardon me just a moment while I pull up my schedule.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm looking at. I'm looking at something that sounds like you were slowly completing. After that, you had some issues, personal and the site, perhaps. But you did make a commitment that you would finish your hours by the end of January, which would have left you with 2 months to spare. So I'm just trying to figure out,
what happened.
What happened, yeah.
Yeah.
That had mostly to do with the practical side at that point.
Did you request assistance with finding a different site or getting help in any way?
The practicum that we choose to do is pretty much up to us. It just has to be approved by the school.
Okay, so that sounds like you could have chosen a different site, and according to their document, you had indicated you felt confident that you would have the remaining hours completed within 4 weeks to be eligible to enter an NUR 590B course prior to the completion deadline.
I was mistaken.
Okay. Thank you, DM. School representatives, please come forward. Please state your name for the record.
Julie Kelly.
And Austin Rhodes.
You want to make an opening statement?
Yes, please. As has been discussed, student DM did sign her enrollment agreement for the dual degree program on September 13th of 2010. She posted her first date of attendance in that degree program on March 22nd, 2011. The catalog in effect at the time of her enrollment, which she acknowledged receipt of upon signing her enrollment agreement, as well as the current policy and the policy throughout her period of attendance, has always reflected that there is a 5-year graduation or degree completion deadline for master's degree programs. Student DM did complete her nursing practicum A on July 20th of 2015. That left her approximately 8 months to complete practicum B and finish her degree requirements. Upon the conclusion of practicum A in July, she indicated that she was not complete with her practicum hours required to enter the final course of 590B. The 5-year degree completion deadline was reinforced with student DM at that time and began discussing her plan to complete. In November of 2015, student DM indicated that she was working toward completion of the required hours and that she would be complete by January of 2016 and also acknowledged the degree completion deadline. In November of 2015, her academic counselor did provide her with 4 upcoming start dates for the cohort of 590B, which would meet her degree completion deadline, and also developed with student DM a plan to finish by the deadline and complete the practicum hours by January. Student DM elected to enroll or requested to be scheduled for the 590B course starting on February 9th of 2016, which would have met her deadline. On January 13th, the student indicated to her academic counselor that the 2/9/16 start date was a problem due to her work schedule. I reviewed our records. I have no indication that it was due to a practicum site issue. The AC did provide her with alternate dates of February 16th or March 8th, but again reinforced that she must meet attendance by the March 2016 deadline. As of February 17th, 2016, the student had completed only 45 of the 60 required hours. However, she felt confident that in the weeks remaining that she would have sufficient time to complete the hours as well as meet the 3/8/16 course start date. On February 23rd, the student called and spoke with her academic counselor, asking to extend the 5-year deadline, a minimum of 60 days past the March 22nd deadline for degree completion. Her AC advised her that that was not possible due to the policy restriction, which has been discussed with student DM on multiple occasions. As stated, policy 503 does indicate that appeals to extend a program completion deadline will only be reviewed if the student's program is still the most current version in their state or jurisdiction. As of that date, the current version, which she was enrolled in being version 2, had retired effective October 1st, 2015. There was a current active version being the MSN/MHA version 3, which was active. That program is now also retired. In February, on February 24th of 2016, student DM was approved to take the 590B practicum as a directed study and also again informed that she must meet the March 22nd start date to stay within the degree completion deadline. As of March 18th, being just 3 or 4 days before the course was to start, the student called her academic counselor stating that she was not ready to begin the directed study and asked to speak with a supervisor. She did speak with an academic counseling manager who again reinforced that she could not apply for a degree completion deadline under the current policy and would be required to update if she did not post attendance by March 22nd. On March 21st, the faculty member also contacted the academic counselor, stating that the student was not academically clear to enter 590B as she had not completed the requirements of 590A. Again, the student was informed that she must update to the current degree program. Between April 1st and April 12th of 2016, the student spoke with the Director of Student Services, a Senior Director of Student Services, Academic Counseling Manager, and Senior Academic Counselor, all again who informed her that there was no possibility of appeal for a degree extension. As such, student DM has been informed of her options of either updating degree programs or seeking alternative programs, but that there will be no exception made for her to continue forward in the version 2 of her current degree program.
Did you practice that?
I'm sorry?
Did you practice that?
I wrote it out.
Did she finish 590A?
She did.
She did finish it. All right. So all she's required is 590B. In that version to graduate.
At this point, she has passed 14 months since she has completed 590A. As a result, she would also be required to repeat 590A before she could then go into 590B if an exception were made.
Ah, okay. The version 2 that was...
No, not yet.
The version 2 that was retired, she indicated in her writings that are there still students taking that version? They were enrolled in 2015?
Correct. And to look at that, the dual degree program version 2, which she is currently enrolled in, began in May of 2007. Students were effectively enrolled in that program up through October of 2015. Again, these may be students that are continuing in the pipeline but have not passed their degree completion deadline.
Okay. So you haven't, is still active.
So you haven't closed out that program. So the program itself is still ongoing for some number of students who are in it.
I would assume so. I cannot answer that. I don't oversee scheduling, but.
So there was the one version that she was in that retired on October 1st, 15, but she and many other students were still in it. Her deadline was March. And then you said the next version that was active then that is retired now.
Correct.
And then now there's another. One.
There is no current active version of that degree program.
So
there, excuse me.
When she was given the option of she could switch to the new active, according to her statement, only something like 15 out of 50 something would transfer. So you could see why that wasn't really a viable option.
That is the when the degree completion worksheet was done, that would be the credit loss by updating.
Yeah. So you didn't update a new version. You just discontinued this degree program. And you have a similar one that she can go into but doesn't transfer a lot of credits.
We have a standalone Master of Science in Nursing and a standalone Master of Health Administration, but we no longer offer the dual degree program, correct?
Okay. So did you offer to her an explanation? Because honestly, that one, were it me, I wouldn't be too happy to have only 15 out of all of that work accepted, so that's really not a viable option. So the other options that you're offering her, were they more palpable?
I'm sorry, more what?
More palpable, like were more of her...
Or was that the only option you gave her?
The options provided to the student were that she either update to the current dual degree program, which was then available, or look at an alternate degree program. But she was not eligible to appeal to extend her degree completion deadline under version 2.
So of these alternatives, were any of these alternatives any more palatable than the upgrade?
That would be from the student's perspective.
well, from common sense, a 15 out of 50 is, I don't think, would be palatable in anybody's mind. Right. So transferring to any of these other alternatives, with any of these other alternatives anywhere near close, that she wouldn't be repeating years of redoing years of work.
Again, the policy is it states, and therefore the reason that degree programs are updated is to ensure that the academic integrity of the institution remains intact.
I understand that, but I also understand you currently have students in that program.
Yeah, that's why. Correct.
And so, and here's what happens. Lots of times, unfortunately, we know you very well, when you guys come forward, you have towed to the line of the policies. And clearly, in this case, the student let life get in the way, or life did get in the way, and you guys did a very good job of giving all the notices, so I'll give you all of that.
Definitely.
What I'm down at the end is, wow, this student has gone through all this time. She had some issues, which apparently, you know, she tried to address on her own with the site, et cetera. She could have been more proactive in handling that, getting another site she could have done. She could have spoken to you guys about it, and she didn't. She thought she would be able to finish it in this time, but she had this, you know, job at the VA hospital, and it was, you know, taking up her time. I understand she made the commitment. I'm totally fine with that. I understand if the letter of the policy was she wasn't supposed to do it. But now I'm looking at, you know, headline, student completed 50 out of 52, whatever the numbers were, and UOP says, sorry, we're still offering that program, but not for you. You have to spend $10,000 more and complete 45 more credits in order to get a degree. So that's what I'm looking at here, and we're supposed to be here as consumer protection, but also make sure you adhere to your policies. So always hit the point where if your policy is such that, yes, this is a normal policy, but we have some leeway that our lawyer can help us understand. And one issue is often when the program has been truly retired and the licenses have elapsed and it's no longer accredited, and you literally cannot offer that degree. I get that. That does not appear to be the case here. So I'm just really stuck where I think that you were, in my opinion, sitting there saying, we dotted the I's, crossed the T's, she did too bad, so sad. She's out of luck. There is no viable alternative for her other than spending years more to get a degree that we have open and available.
We get the completion time. I mean, you're an accreditor.
Exactly.
You know, they're requiring you to do that. They want to make sure you have academic integrity in that sense. But if the program is still being offered, you know, maybe she gets one shot to do this because she has some culpability on her part as far as not getting this completed.
No, she does. They did follow their policy. But
right.
And I arrive at the exact same place Ms. Leonard does. So I'd like to recognize the executive director.
Squirming. Because our practice, well, let me back before. Did you say you enrolled students in this one version up through October of 2015?
That's when the program retired, yes.
No, I thought they
You said you retired in October 1, but then you said you enrolled people through October.
Through October in this same version.
Students could have been enrolled in version 3 beginning in January of 2015, new enrollments. Students who were either current students or changing programs, updating programs, could have gone into the version 2. Now, any new enrollment began having to enter the version 3 beginning. It was offered as of January 2015 and was required as of April of 2015.
Okay, so, and it's a 5-year program, correct? Okay, so a student who enrolls in December of 2014 would not complete version 2 until December of 2019.
It's a 60-credit program. How many?
Okay, so this student has until the 19th. So all of a sudden, in April 2015, this student is told to they can't continue in that version, and there is no exception. But yet, that's what they enrolled in. There's something wrong with that picture.
I'm not following. I'm sorry.
Okay, how do I say? You're just continuing a program that students had the opportunity that UOP allowed them to enroll in up and through, I'm just picking a date, December 2014.
That was
okay?
March 2015.
I'm picking a date that's easy for me. So 2014... December 2014, that student has up to 5 years. They've signed an enrollment agreement. I'm going to pay this much. These are my expectations. I'm going to take this practicum or clinical or whatever it is, 509, 540, whatever. in December or beginning of fall of 2019. But you tell me, 2016, sorry, this version's gone. And I haven't gotten to that point. And then you tell me, okay, I had 5 years, but this is no longer available, so you have to, it's not here.
No, Director, they wouldn't do that. They would, if the student enrolled in a version that they have to complete in 5 years, and if they discontinued offering that program to new students going forward, they are still obligated to allow that student to finish the program. This student did not finish her program in 5 years.
Even though the others have the opportunity to finish
because
the
they
same
rolled
program.
That's where Ms. Leonard and I will land on this, given all the bad press this our industry has had. I guess I just ask you, besides your policy, which you clearly follow to the letter of the law, there's no doubt about that, at least from what you presented and the stuff. What other practical reason would you not let her complete this thing for?
As I said, it's based upon accreditation, academic integrity. If we do for one student, we will do for all students. The academic council promulgates the policies that we are then to enforce, and it's based upon accreditation. And again, I understand, as you say, you know, the time and cost differential, but to do that for one student, it has the potential of opening it up for thousands upon thousands of students, and where do we draw the line?
Are you saying accrediting requires the student to finish in 5 years?
No. I'm saying that we are required to follow our policies as we have established them regarding what we have told our accreditors we are doing.
So
and therefore, we uphold our policies.
There's absolutely no exception in any circumstances whatsoever. If you don't finish in 5 years, that's it. Yeah. There's no exceptions.
Can I just get a really quick clarification on this?
We got a lot of questions.
I'm sorry. Because I'm seeing here under your exceptions. So a student, let's say you were taking new enrollments January 2015, but you retired the program in October of 2015. So they lose their ability to appeal an extension of that program in October because it's retired? I'm looking at this exception.
No.
Appeals to extend the program completion deadline are only reviewed if that program version is still the most current.
If you're not
enrolled. So it's
enrolled.
In October if it's not current?
If you're not currently enrolled.
Okay.
You can appeal it through while you're enrolled, but once you're the enrollment and they've retired it, you're done.
Yeah, but that's the problem, too. If they retired it in October 15, by their action of choosing that date when they had someone in it, that means you can't appeal. So that would seem like it means all these other students, if they chose to retire on October 15, that means every student who's in it no longer has the option to appeal. That doesn't seem fair.
They're currently enrolled, so they can appeal it.
Why is she not currently?
Because
she missed the deadline.
She's beyond the 5 years.
But she was asking before the 5 years was up, she was asking, and she was told no.
She didn't appeal their decision.
Well, she was.
And that was not the most current degree version in her state or jurisdiction at that time. Version 3 was already available.
At your choice, though. So what I'm saying is, in October 15, knowing there were students still in that program, you shut the door on that program and said, if you're already in it, you can continue. But because we have this policy that says, since we closed that door on you, if you need an extension, you can't have it because we closed that door. That's what I'm sticking with. I feel like, honestly, this sounds like you guys did some tricky fast stepping to ensure that a very large quantity of students, if they, you know, she missed a step, I guarantee she missed a step. But because she missed that step, and because this program was closed in December of 15, she could never get an extension, whereas another student would have been able to, all because your arbitrary date of choosing that date.
No other student would have been eligible to get an extension either once they had crossed the 5-year deadline. So if they had started in September of 2015, they would have 5 years. We would be obligated to teach them for that 5-year period.
In the current program that is now live and active. If that program stayed live and active for 10 years, a student who started on day one, at the end of their 5 years, they're in a program, the program's still active, would they be able to ask for an extension?
No.
So nobody can get an extension. So it's hard to stop at 5 years, no matter what the circumstances is.
There is reasons for exception. For instance, if it remains the current version in the student's state or jurisdiction.
But the problem is that is your choice. you're saying it's no longer an active version. That's where I'm stuck, is that you're saying it's not an active version because we closed the door. Because we closed that door, we can't give an exception. If we haven't closed the door, we might be able to consider giving an exception. That's the loop I'm stuck in.
But again, we didn't close the door. The door was still open. The door was open for her to update under the policy as she reached her 5-year completion deadline.
Yeah. And to do that, if she did that, though, very few of her credits, who would take that?
But then that would tie the hands of every school and every university to ever update a program version.
No, updating the program is fine. I'm just so stuck that you have other students in this program, which means, I guess if I were another student in this program listening to this, I would say, wow, UOP is completely ripping me off. They're allowing me to finish in a program that they said is no longer any good, and they're not going to let this student get a little extension to finish 2 credits. So it is not a good program. There's no value in letting her finish those 2 credits and get this degree. But all the rest of you, thousands of students who are in it, feel free to continue and go. I'm going to give you this worthless degree.
But it's not a worthless degree. Mm-hmm. The point is that it's a fine degree, but she has met the 5-year deadline. She was told of the 5-year deadline. There was a program for her to update to. This isn't anything the university did to her. She was well aware.
But again, update to a program that gives her very, very few transfer credits when other students are actively, and for years to come, will still be actively finishing this program. The fact that the only option you're really giving her is to pay probably tens of thousands of dollars more and spend years more for want of 2 credits, that's where I'm stuck. And honestly, that's honestly where we get our, in my opinion, the bad taste people getting them off of proprietary schools, is the fact that this sounds so wrong. And I'm saying she was wrong in not finishing by March. Whatever her life businesses were that kept her from completing in March, yes, you guys did a good job of explaining it, but the bottom line is that it's because you guys closed the program there, that appears to be a very big reason why she can't get this extension, other than transfer to a program that has, her current program has very little value, yet all these other students are in it. That's just where I'm stuck, and this does not sound good.
Well, and I would just interject too, and Julie can respond to this as well. I know we're talking this conceptually in terms of there being thousands of students out there. I don't know that we necessarily know that is the case, because we had been focusing on the version 3.
But is there even one student?
I likely, yes, but okay. I don't think
so. Even one student makes the case. It still makes the case that if my 5-year deadline ran out and his didn't, and you can't give an exception to allow me to finish the 2 credits because the program's no longer good enough because we have a new one, yet he's still continuing it, where's the value for him?
She
had 52 credits in the new program, if I understood, and said they'd take 15 of those.
15, right.
That means 37 credits
of their own.
This is second. That means 37 credits she'd have to redo. What's your credit hour price in the master's programs?
I'm sorry, I do not know.
But technically, if you were enrolling through October 15th of 2015, your last student that you enrolled would potentially not have to complete their degree till 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a dead program.
There. It's still there.
Well, again, and it further compounded where if she had actual classroom didactic stuff to do, she does. She has a practicum to do.
There might not be a lot of students, and it's probably one of the reasons why they might have discontinued it, because they didn't enroll very many.
I guess my issue really is limiting a student's appeal rights like this when a program is not really actually dead.
It's still operating.
It's still operating.
Through
and then forcing them into a new program at an extended cost.
This is like
I'd like to make a motion to go into executive session.
All right.
I want to touch on
that.
Have a second.
Second.
Okay. Yep. Time one.
At 2:45.
Is anyone else on? Oh.
DM.
DM, are you still on the phone?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I am going to have to hang up. Okay. But you can. So, I'm going to hang up. You can go ahead and you can call back in, but you will be on hold until I call back. Okay.
Okay.
Do you understand?
Yes, I'll just do the same thing I did before.
Yeah, and until I call back in, you're just going to hear pretty music.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh huh.
Thanks.
54. We'll go back in as soon as everybody's back in.
Thank you.
makes me crazy.
Welcome to CenturyLink Conferencing. Please enter your passcode.
It's a penny utility. You can close it now.
Please hold while I confirm your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the second person to join the meeting.
Hi, this is Terry. We will be...
Okay, we're back in session right at 2:50.
All right, thank you for that. What?
DM, are you on the phone?
I'm here.
Thank you.
Okay, let's resume with our... where we were.
Okay, here is the issue that we have with your policy. You clearly followed your policy. However, if we are understanding this correctly... the students can appeal only to go into an active program. You now don't have an active program. So it feels to me like all of the students, whether it's one or thousands, are in jeopardy of the way you have worded your policy leaves all of those students without remedy. And unfortunately, that isn't anything we can do to help DM at this time. So... do we want to make a motion to take care of the DM issue?
Yes, I think as it is, DM, just so you're aware, they followed their policy to the letter of the law. Therefore, statutorily, there's no remedy at this committee left for you at that moment. So we're going to have to make a motion to dismiss, and I'll make it a motion to dismiss complaint 17-S003 at this point. Do I have a second? Or
second.
Second. Any further discussion?
Just the appeal to the university to possibly consider letting her finish, because you're still teaching this version too, finish those 4 credits and let her complete it, graduate, and be on her way.
Second that request. I understand that there potentially this opens the door for a lot of students. However, in the particular quagmire that she's in right now, and with it being the way that you chose to set your policy and the fact that you don't currently have one of these even open right now, I would really appeal to you to consider the outcome for this individual student.
Okay. Any further discussion? I'll call for the vote then. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it unanimously. This complaint is dismissed.
And DM, you may want to call back and speak to Terry or Keith if you want to make sure you understand what just happened, because I know that none of you were able to be here during that discussion.
This discussion, however, did bring into a lot of questions about your appeal process for current programs and people that are progressing in programs that are discontinued. I would be comfortable opening a complaint, a state board complaint, against UOP to fully vet this, see how many students that are really left in the lurch and potentially left in the lurch because of this, the way that the policy is written. So, yeah, I'd make a motion to open the plan on that.
Can you be a little bit more...
yes, they have a policy that literally cannot truly be followed. The students appear to end up being in a position that it's school's own doing, that they shut down a program, students are in the program, recourse is one program's closed, the next one closed, so they are controlling the ability for students to be able to use a policy, which in my opinion makes a policy useless.
And just for clarification, the language in the appeal says appeal to extend the program completion deadline.
Mm-hmm. You're saying
what
you
the policy
that.
Is currently is not an extension to extend the program completion deadline. They're basically being told you're either in a new program completely or too bad. Mm-hmm. So that is there, it's not a real appeal.
And the new program.
You're still talking about the 5 years, though.
No.
Once the 5 years
expire,
you're
starting the ability to appeal.
Yes.
It's right now. If I'm in a program that I started last week and they discontinue the stuff, I don't have the ability to appeal.
Like I said, hypothetically, if she were still in the program currently and wanted to appeal to extend her program completion deadline on the version 2, wouldn't be able to happen, have to go into the, and there's not even a current version. So it's not
and
really an appeal
happened.
To extend the program completion deadline at that point.
The thing is, I never withdrew. They withdrew.
No, I'm sorry, DM. We're done off of that complaint now, so no more comments at that point. So you're welcome to listen, but we're on to a different thing right now. Okay. Do you not understand what we're getting at, Keith?
I just want to be able to do the letter that it makes sense, and I'm not, because there's a lot of appeal processes on a lot of different kind of programs. And
this is specifically the appeal to extend the program completion
deadline. Yeah, you're right.
Based on while they're still enrolled, based on the 5-year, but since we've, I think, been told today that their only options are to enroll into the newest version, in which currently there is not, this is not a real appeals process available, especially to the currently enrolled students in version 3 and the leftovers.
Yeah, because version 3 has been discontinued.
They've all been discontinued at this point. So our concern is what happens in the next 5 years.
That's for new enrollment, mm-hmm. not for people that are currently enrolled. And there's an appeal process for the...
Well, I would like to know how many people are currently enrolled in version 2, in version 3, which are still have students in it, because if they come up against maximum time frame, they're not going to have a voice to appeal. Okay,
yeah, that's the program.
Yeah, nowhere to go without going, hey, all right, I have 50 credits and I'm only getting 15 and what?
You want current enrollment in V2 and in V3.
Correct.
You want VM1, isn't she in 1?
She's in V2.
No, she was in 2.
She's in 2. Okay.
V2, yes, V2 and
V3. V2 and V3. And in the policy itself.
Can I ask a question of him? Is that an accurate picture, what he just described?
About
the appeals process and program version ending, and they're at the 5-year length and they can't appeal them?
They can appeal to go into the most current version, which would be version
right.
3, even though that is no longer an active program, but they could appeal. That would be an allowable appeal to go into
that. But it is still being offered. Active and offered to defer
first.
I guess I'm just saying that technically that's not an extension of their program completion deadline. That's to get into a different program.
Yeah. Right. This feels like bait and switch here. You're saying...
Because you're giving them an appeal to extend their program completion deadline.
If you can't make it, here's our policy. You can appeal. The student says, hey, I can't make the deadline. Too bad, so sad. You can appeal to a completely different program, and the appeal is really nothing, because all it is withdrawing from program and being allowed 15 credits to another program.
It's not a real appeal.
That is not a real appeal. That is just a too bad.
That's a transfer policy,
that right there seems grossly unfair. And on top of it, you currently don't even have a program for the students in it to transfer into. So now you have a program that is putting students in complete jeopardy, because by your own way you have things set up, not only does your appeal process misstate what the appeal process does, you can't even follow what your intention of it is, and that's to funnel them into a different program for which very few credits transfer. So all over, not good.
Here we have a motion and a second on the table. Any further conversation? Ms. Blanchard, are you clear on that? Thank you. Okay, here now I'll call for a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it unanimously. Thank you for appearing today.
Thank you.
We'll see you again next time.
And
at this time, we're moving on in the agenda to item 5, which is the call to the public. Anybody care to make a statement? Talk? Okay. Hearing none, we close that part. And I call this meeting of this complete committee, State Board, dismissed at 3:04.
Did you transfer your appointment?